It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that, people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. We have a big show planned for you today. Thrilled to have in studio with me my good friends and sponsorship partners, Karen Levine, award-winning realtor with Remax Alliance. Great to have you here.
Nice to be here.
And Lauren Levy with PolyFi. You are a mortgage specialist. You can help people in all kinds of reverse mortgages, new house, VA, the works. It's great to have you here as well.
Thank you. Great to be back.
So we've got a big show planned, so fasten your seatbelts.
Okay.
And then we'll be talking with Cheryl Akison in the third and fourth segment. You may recall she was a CBS investigative reporter, award-winning reporter, and she was breaking the stories on Obama's gunwalking program, as well as the Benghazi attacks, and the Department of Justice started to spy on her, and so she had actually filed suit and was having trouble with that suit because the judge said you have to name the people that were doing that, and the Department of Justice wouldn't give up the names, and then guess what? We just found out some of the names, and so she's going to start that again. So I reached out to her. She said, yep, I'll come on. So we'll talk with her in the third and fourth segment. So we'll go through just a little bit of what happened yesterday. Patty has a great, you know, all of these different headlines. And I didn't run them all off for you guys. And Lauren said, this is the shortest outline I've seen. But that's because I don't think that we'll get through all those. Lauren, if you want all of the news headlines, I'll make sure Steve gets those for you. Okay?
Perfect. I look forward to that. Thank you.
So as we look at these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And ultimately, we see this real romance, this narrative romancing socialism. But socialism ultimately has to come down to force. And if something is a good idea, you should not have to force people. And we continue to see this socialization of things that make our lives better. Which is a problem. When government gets involved, typically the price goes up, the quality goes down, and the supply becomes limited. And we can see that. We can see that in housing. Transportation, education, energy, water, broadband, data, healthcare. You see it across the spectrum. And that is why we need to continue to look at these issues, each one of them, and not give ground on the force component and stand for freedom. Steve, you look like you want to say something.
I've got a mystery soundbite for you. We don't have time to do it today. I had it sitting here, but you're going to love it. It's going to be a mystery soundbite. You won't know who it is, I think, although you'll probably identify the voice very quickly. But he, and there's a clue, gives way to that exact verbiage that you just used. And these words were spoken back in the 80s. So
okay, so tomorrow morning?
Shall that
be a cliffhanger for tomorrow morning?
Yeah, whenever time allows.
Okay, sounds great. I want to say thank you to you, Steve, to the team. That is Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. And thank you to all you listeners out there. Each of you are treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose. So today, go out and strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. The show recaps are there. Embedded in that is the podcast, and also there is a place where you can link to the podcast as well. If for some reason you miss us at 6 a.m. and we're replayed from 10 to 11 p.m. each night. I got the gremlins this morning, my friends. I'm sorry about that. Inspiration, wisdom. Since we're talking about a couple of things, yesterday I had my first experience with Antifa down at the MLK Parade. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about that. We've got Cheryl Akison. So I went to George Orwell for the quote for today. And George Orwell was a novelist, essayist, and critic best known for his novels Animal Farm and 1984. He was a man of strong opinions who addressed some of the major political movements of his times, including imperialism, fascism, and communism. He was born in 1903. He died in 1950. Now, Steve said this is really heavy, so I may have to say it twice. One does not establish a dictatorship in order to safeguard a revolution. One makes the revolution in order to establish the dictatorship. Again, one does not establish a dictatorship in order to safeguard a revolution. One makes the revolution in order to establish the dictatorship. Pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with some of the stuff that's going on out here and some of the things that are happening, I thought that was very, very timely. Our joke for today, this is from Joke Buddha, said that in the autumn of 1983, a tape recording of a telephone conversation between President Reagan and Prime Minister Thatcher was sent anonymously to newspapers in various parts of the world. A covering note claimed that the tape was a recording of a cross line on which was heard part of the two leaders' telephone conversation. In January of 1984, the story was taken up by the Sunday Times and the San Francisco Chronicle. The Sunday Times described the tape as part of a KGB propaganda war. The U.S. State Department said that the tape was evidence of an increasingly sophisticated Russian disinformation campaign. Have we heard this before? But in fact, the tape was made by members of an anarchist punk rock group called Crass. The tape had been produced by using parts of TV and radio broadcasts made by the two leaders, then overdubbed with telephone noises. I thought since that happened in 1984, we'd have that for our funnies. So a couple of things. Yesterday was the MLK parade right here in Denver. And so I've on a regular basis gone down and walked with my friends, Casper Stockham and Derek Wilburn, with Black Conservatives, and to be at the parade. And yesterday was interesting. There was a handful of us, and then there was just a lot of people peacefully walking in the parade to honor, you know, civil rights, the idea that all men are created equal with these rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. You know, many times when they talk about Martin Luther King Jr., they leave out the fact that he was a Christian minister, that he really looked at the precepts of working hard, individual opportunity, and in many ways his message has been hijacked, but I think we see that coming back. I had my first experience with Antifa. You know, that's the anti-fascist group that wears the scarves, and they wanted to continue to just kind of intimidate us. And so they would walk, you know, try to get in with us, and they had the scarves on. And I said to Derek Wilburn, I said, I probably shouldn't say this to them, but I was going to say, if I had a face like that, I'd cover it up too. So, but I didn't say that, Steve.
You didn't say it. Okay.
What do you...
that watching their antics in several different places, that would probably not have been a good way to go. But on a serious note, though, they are flooding social media right now with basic threats. What happens if Bernie gets shut out somehow, or he doesn't get, he's not the nominee? What they're going to do around the nation?
Well, they were Bernie supporters. They had Bernie water bottles, and some of them had Bernie placards. And so that is a bit. That's kind of the Democrats are going to have to figure that out, though. It looks like the establishment Democrats are going to try to maybe shut Bernie out. But what they stand for is very, very troubling. And they were just really trying to be bullies, if you will. Like, there was one young woman who she just wanted to stare me down. And so I just stared her down too, until finally she looked away. And then she tried to engage in that again. I thought, I'm not going to go down that road. But they tried to get in with us, walk with us. And these were all young white kids, which was so interesting, carrying Black Lives Matter signs. And just trying to create trouble. There was one kid that had these gloves on that looked like they had like brass knuckles or something, and he was, kept pushing his gloves and turning around looking at us. And I did have some butterflies in my stomach. However, the Denver police, thank you to them. They walked along on the sidewalk and they watched all this thing come down. But they were just trying to be bullies, just kind of trying to intimidate us, try to make something happen. And I just thought it was really interesting to have that interaction. Any comments from anybody, or I'll move on to what happened in Virginia? Okay. Yeah. We'll move on. Okay. So yesterday in Virginia, as many of you may know, Virginia, the legislature is talking about a gun confiscation of the guns of everyday hardworking, regular people, taking away their ability to protect their friends and their family. And so yesterday, this is from Fox News, says a gun rights rally in Richmond that brought thousands of people from across the country to protest a push by Virginia Democrats for comprehensive gun control ended peacefully without any major incidents. Threats of violence had escalated in the days leading up to Monday's demonstration following reports that white supremacist armed militia and other extremist groups were planning to attend. Governor Ralph Northam, a Democrat, had declared a state of emergency late last week and beefed up security around the Capitol. Thousands of people came to Richmond to make their voices heard, he said in a statement Monday evening. Today showed that when people disagree, they can do so peacefully. The issues before us evoke strong emotions, and progress is often difficult. Progress. I will continue to listen to the voices of Virginians. I doubt that. Mm-hmm. And I will continue to do everything in my power to keep our Commonwealth safe. Not sure I believe that either. Anyway, I just wanted to note that I think the media was trying to make this make an event again. And I think that we've been very fortunate in our country as people are trying to divide us and create chaos, that, you know, everyday people are standing up peacefully for these rights that we really believe in. So we're going to go to break here in just a moment. Before we do that, Lauren Levy, I was thinking about you. The Patriots, I'm sorry, they're not in the Super Bowl.
Yes, it's a weird feeling.
I know. Your Patriots.
I don't know what I'm going to do in 2 weeks on Sunday.
Well, you could like root for the Chiefs.
It's been an annual ritual for me.
Oh, ouch. It has been a ritual. But you know, I saw something regarding the Kansas City Chiefs. The last time they were in the Super Bowl, the picture was in black and white.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. 50 years ago.
A lot of people weren't alive.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, though. I'm excited
for
about
yourself.
It. Yeah.
I know. I grew up a Red Sox fan, so I know what droughts are like.
Do you have a team for the Super Bowl, Karen Levine?
I do not. But mm-hmm. I had a thought regarding this gun control. Somebody shared a video with me earlier this week. Well, I guess today's only Tuesday. But anyway.
So it'd be Monday, huh?
I know. It was probably over the weekend. But anyway, the reminder in the video was the fact that the beautiful country of Switzerland hands out guns to all their citizens and trains them in firearms. And they have one of the safest countries in the world.
Good point. I like it.
Yeah, it was a nice reminder.
A good reminder for sure. So before we go to break, though, the big game is right around the corner. It's the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. Go Chiefs and the Niners. The place to watch the big game is at Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of the action. If you join them for the big game, you'll be entered for a chance to win a 55-inch HD TV. You can try their new roasted wings while you watch the Avs and the Nuggets chase a playoff spot. Wednesday is Dine-In Wing Day. All the wings you can eat for $15.99. And you can have Hooters wings delivered to your front door. Tomorrow night, are you going to be at my house?
I'm hoping so, yes.
Okay, so I'm going to have wings and probably buffalo shrimp. And I think, actually, Steve may drop by. We may let him drop by
drop
tomorrow.
By. Night. Yeah. Because he's been craving buffalo shrimp?
Or no, because
he wants to
meet C.L. Bryant. That's why. So anyway, more information, go to my website, kimmunson.com. There's landing pages for all of my great sponsors, and we're going to go to break. We'll be right back. Have Karen Levine, award-winning realtor with RE/MAX Alliance, and Lauren Levy with PolyFi Mortgage Specialist here in studio. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, wishing you a great Tuesday. In studio, Karen Levine, RE/MAX Alliance, Lauren Levy, PolyFi, Mortgage Specialist. Let's jump in here. There's a lot going on. I think you got the year-end housing report, didn't you, Karen?
Yes.
Okay, what happened in Colorado last year, or in the Denver metro area last year?
Well, it was an awesome real estate market in both Metro Denver and the state of Colorado. The Colorado Association of Realtors research group came out with their final report for the year about 10 days ago, I believe. And in 2019, the Denver metro region closed really strong. We had over 5,500 home sales in the Metro Denver area, and we had an 18% increase, which I should say that was an 18% increase over the December before.
In value or in homes sold?
Homes sold. So okay. Over 5,500 homes sold in the Metro Denver area, and that was an 18% increase over 2018 December.
Okay.
So pretty strong. I had been talking about the fact that we were seeing under contract pendings.
Right.
That number continued to increase month over month. And again, we saw that number be very, very strong in December. But we also saw the sold and closed properties catch up, which means under contracts are actually closing. That's what sellers like.
Okay.
They can walk away with their equity and go do their next real estate investment. So that was really exciting. We still are challenged with inventory shortages. It was the lowest inventory we've seen. We thought 2 years ago we weren't going to see anything get any lower, but we did. But the positive is we had 9.3% increase in listings. So unusual in December to see numbers go up. Generally, people are on vacation, mm-hmm. doing holiday stuff, doing family commitments, and putting their home on the market is not a priority. But they saw opportunity and put their homes on the market in December, and it paid off for them either in December, they went under contract, which we saw in the under contract numbers, or they are now under contract and we'll see them close in January. I know my year is off to a great start. Mm-hmm. A couple of new listings have come on the market. We've exposed them on the market over a weekend for 3 or 4 days so that sellers got good traffic. And we saw multiple offers on those homes, one being $500,000, the other being a very affordable home at $240,000.
Great. Okay. And you and I have known each other for a long time. You have seen the ups and downs mm-hmm. in this market. And really, as people are thinking about buying or selling, I can tell you, working with good people and working with a professional is so important. And there's been only a few times where I've kind of tried to go the cheap route, if you will, and it ended up being the expensive route.
Mm-hmm.
So working with good people and a professional is a good thing. So, Karen, your number is 303-877-7516, 303-877-7516. Lauren, let's move over to you. Lauren Levy, you with PolyFi. And you work, with all different mortgages. In fact, we recently did something for my other show about VA loans, which, let's talk just a little bit about that here, because we have a lot of people that could take advantage of a VA loan. So it would be a veteran, somebody in active duty, or somebody you said that has eligibility, right?
That's right. And you and I talked about how of all the things that the government tries to do, a lot of times they muck it up. But in this case, they did something really well. It's an awesome benefit for people that are eligible through current military or veterans. You can buy a home with 0% down. You can take cash out of your current home with all the way up to 100%, so the equivalent of 0% down. And there's no mortgage insurance on those loans. It's a really good program for those that can qualify for it.
Okay. And where are interest rates approximately these
days? We talk about this. People ask me all the time when I go to do a new loan for them, do I think they're going up or down? And they haven't moved much. We're in a really news-driven market. So you'll see things where, when the U.S. killed that Iranian general and then there was going to be retaliation, the 10-year treasuries rose a little bit with all that happening, but then nothing happened really. The response was muted, came right back to where we were. The Federal Reserve is not doing anything. They're saying that they're going to stay where they're at for a while. I don't see anything that's going to make rates rise unless some news happens tomorrow. And that's what I explain to people. We could have a terrorist attack and things could drop, but we could just keep going the way we're going and nothing happens.
So go ahead, Karen.
What's exciting is that the national economy is in great condition. And last year when we had our economic summit in 2019, there was concern we would see a rise in interest rates. And there was no sign of inflation last year. And so rates didn't increase. They actually decreased. And we're seeing our economist professionals this year at our economic summit all were in agreement that rates are going to stay steady, or we may see another small drop. So affordability, although we hear out in the marketplace, prices continue to appreciate interest rates are allowing affordability in our marketplace. And it's still a great time to invest in real estate. And if you're a homeowner and you're thinking about where you want to build additional wealth, think about an investment property. There are great opportunities out there for people to buy additional real estate and make money.
Okay, so that brings up a question, Lauren Levy. If somebody wanted to do this, to buy investment real estate, could they refinance their home to do that?
Absolutely. A lot of people will do that. They'll take equity out of their current home if they have enough to use as a down payment on an investment property. We do that a lot. The key is to have someone look at your situation to make sure you can qualify to buy the investment property. You know, make sure if you don't have a landlord history, if you can get a lease in place, if you can't qualify for both payments. So it's just a good idea to have someone take a look to make sure the numbers work, that you can carry the loans. But absolutely, people will take loans out in their current residence to get equity to buy either a vacation property, second home, or an investment property for sure.
So like an investment property could be something that you'd be buying something that would hopefully appreciate in value, but also could be a cash flow instrument
exactly.
for retirement then, right?
Exactly. A lot of people, especially when they're younger, will buy investment properties, let someone else pay their mortgage for them. Every month you're building equity, and the closer you can get to paying that off, it just becomes like an annuity if it's paid off. The rental income just becomes an annuity to you in retirement.
Well, and I think what's exciting about that is sometimes people are very focused on the cash component, the cash flow component.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in my mind, is a bonus. What the exciting part is somebody is buying you a very valuable asset.
Mm-hmm.
You're not buying it. They're buying it for you, and that's your tenant. And we would encourage your listeners, you know, if they're interested in getting into the investment market, to reach out to Lauren and I, because we can certainly help them navigate that and make sure they make good decisions in making that investment.
Well, you know, and that's another thing. I was thinking a lot about experience. I was thinking about you, Lauren. You've been in the business 17 or 18 years.
That's right. Yep.
So you've seen a lot. And Karen, if I tell you people how long you've been in the business, they're going to start to figure out how old
I know,
we are. So I'm not going to do that.
Well, but we have equal experience to Lauren, if not a little more.
And then we're not going to say if you can take that times whatever number.
Right. Nah.
You know, and I was thinking about Jason McBride, who we'll talk to here in just a few minutes. A lot of experience in the market as well. These ups and downs. I would say we've earned these gray hairs. However, I have a really great hairdresser who makes sure that we only my hairdresser knows for sure. So, but it's so important to work with professionals, to work with good people, and if you try to go the cheap, ultimately it becomes a lot more expensive. And so, Karen Levine, you're such a good friend and a great valued partner. And again, your number. It's 303-877-7516, 303-877-7516. Now, Lauren Levy, I tried to memorize your number.
How can you not get this right?
It's easy.
303-880-8881, right?
Get it.
303-880-8881. So I now have that in my brain.
Perfect. Awesome.
Okay. So Jason McBride, and I have your Presidential Wealth Management number memorized as well. 303-694-1600. 303-694-1600. How you doing?
You're doing great this morning.
Yes.
Good job.
I had my coffee early this morning. Hopefully I can remember my own phone number. But
yeah.
So, Jason, yesterday we talked about how the markets may be a little extended, but maybe not as overheated as they sound after last year's big up. Is there anything that's actually cheap right now?
Well, Kim, one of the adages out there is that if you buy into last year's weakest area, it's likely to become this year's winner. Buy low, sell high, right?
Well, that certainly is a good idea, but is it really?
Well, Kim, the next few days, I'm going to delve into that a little bit further, and I think the reality might actually be pretty surprising, but you asked me if anything is cheap right now.
Right. Now, I'm not going to pin you down on any specific stocks, but are there any areas that look cheap and interesting?
You know, Kim, I think one area that still does look pretty cheap is energy in general, but it might be cheap for a good reason. If you look at a lot of the oil and gas companies, both the big behemoths and even the little ones, it's really a mess as far as their earnings go. Frankly, the entire sector still kind of suffering somewhat from the huge oil price drop, from 105 a barrel down to 27 or so that happened from mid-14 to early 2016.
So the big energy boom here in the U.S. and energy independence hasn't been a big positive for the sector. I find that interesting.
Yeah, well, not as far as a lot of the stock prices go, it hasn't. Oil isn't exactly in short supply right now. And, you know, Kim, when something's widely available, it's not as valuable. So it's really hit or miss. Whether you're looking at the big companies or the small ones, but a lot of the stocks have done very poorly.
Okay, now, Jason, I remember the pipeline deals that paid pretty big dividends were kind of a craze a few years back. How are those doing?
Well, you know, Kim, I remember that too. Those stocks that attained a cult-like following where people started thinking they were almost bulletproof and there was just no way to lose on them. But alas, those suffered right along with the others for the most part.
So how about any bargains? Are there any there?
Well, there could be, Kim. A lot of companies or a lot of experts feel like these companies have restructured. Their balance sheets look better now than they have for a while. A lot of them are maintaining or even starting to raise their dividends. So this, you know, pipeline or master limited partnership sector, it has some spice to it. But if the space catches a break or two, maybe some progress on the pipelines, that could help. Right now, their biggest issue is there's a lot of areas that have an abundance of oil and gas in the ground, but they can't officially get it out of the area and to the refineries and where it needs to go because there's so much constraint on getting pipelines in.
Okay, and if I remember, there were also some tax advantages, though, with these pipeline companies as well.
Well, yeah, at least some of the dividend income is tax deferred. And now back a few years ago, Kim, that meant you got a K-1 if you own these, which a lot of people don't care for that.
Mm-hmm.
They're pain in the neck. I hear
mm-hmm.
you. You know.
Mm-hmm. I do.
But things have evolved, and now at least investors can buy, you know, a basket of these things in a fund or an ETF, which is an exchange-traded fund, and you just get a simple 1099 for tax reporting. So, you know, for those investors that have some patience, they can handle a little bit of spice. You can get paid a decent dividend on these right now while you wait and see if the sector eventually makes a turnaround.
You know, Jason, it's funny. I haven't heard about these for a while.
Well, Kim, you know, that's the way it goes. When something's exciting and the prices have already gone way up, it's on everybody's radar. Nobody wants to miss the party, but, you know, it's like the old country song, nobody knows you when you're down and out.
So you're saying maybe some of these pipeline deals could be friends in low places, huh?
Yeah, well, you did drink your coffee this morning, Kim.
Jason McBride, thank you so much. And you and all your colleagues over at Presidential Wealth Management all have experience, and that is so important when you're talking about your finances. So that phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Natalie will be at the switchboard at 7:30. Jason, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Have a great show, Kim.
Will do. And we're going to go to break. I have Karen Levine, RE/MAX Alliance in studio with me, Lauren Levy, PolyFi, mortgage specialist in studio as well. We're going to be talking with Cheryl Akison, former CBS reporter, award-winning reporter, regarding what is happening in her life now. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out show recaps and podcasts at Kim Munson. That's MONSON.com. We're going to jump into this. Cheryl Atkinson is on the line. Every time she's on the show, people reach out and they're like, she's just so inspirational, and she has such courage because you have you've stood up to some pretty big bullies, I think, out there, Cheryl Atkinson. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I guess nothing I ever intended to do, but part of the necessity of the job in the end.
Isn't that funny how that works out in life? And I have in studio with me a couple of my valued partners as well, Lauren Levy with PolyFi Mortgage Specialist and Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance. So they may jump in here and have some questions for you as well, Cheryl. But let's say somebody hasn't been paying attention. Set this up. What happened to you regarding you were doing reporting on Benghazi, also on the Fast and Furious gun walking program? So what happened? And set that up for somebody that might have not been paying attention.
Well, first take people back to a time before Edward Snowden, before we knew the government had spied on Associated Press and Fox News reporters. So this was so crazy at the time. But some intel officials approached me and separately and said that I was likely being monitored by the government on my computer because of the work I was doing. And they both said separately that the American public would be shocked at the extent to which the government was spying on U.S. citizens, which we now know was all true. But at the time, I thought, well, that's kind of crazy. But there had been a lot of symptoms going on in my house, such as the computer turning itself on at night and a lot of crazy things. Long story short, an intel source got my computer analyzed by a computer technician with the government intel experience, and they immediately identified a long-term government surveillance effort. They knew this because the spyware was proprietary to a federal government agency that was found in my computer. And they'd been watching every keystroke, and somebody planted classified documents in my computer. They got into the CBS system. CBS announced this. I actually sued. 6 years later, the judge decided that I needed to have the actual names of the federal agents who had access to the government IP addresses and software. I was suing John Doe's. We needed discovery to identify the names. On appeal, it got thrown out because one judge agreed with us that said that was, you know, this is all Kafka-esque, that the government had a playbook now on how to spy on people and never be held accountable, just obstruct and make it where there's no discovery available, and the judge will ultimately throw out the case. Bring us to today, we actually have a confession by one of the government agents involved in the surveillance on me, and we have names now. So I've refiled the suit, hoping the judge will now be satisfied that we somehow were able to do that detective work and bring the court the names of some of the agents involved.
How did you get that confession? What happened? How'd that happen?
It's I would just say through some detective work after the case initially got thrown out without prejudice, meaning we could refile. And I'm not the one dealing with the people who have called and offered information to us. My attorneys are doing that. So I can only tell you about five, six months ago, we began checking out some of this sourcing that came to us. And this one really panned out and enabled us to get a lot of good information.
Well, and on that point, before we move on, legal cases are very expensive, and particularly when you are on one side and the government is on the other. The government has unlimited funds, taxpayers' funds, that they can use, and you have to raise your own funds. So you, I want to make sure people know, you are the host of Full Measure with Cheryl Atkinson. It's broadcast Sundays to 43 million people via Sinclair TV, and it says on ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, CW and Telemundo stations. So that's Full Measure with Cheryl Atkinson with Sinclair TV. But how can people help you, Cheryl? Because you don't have unlimited funds to be able to use for this case.
Well, I'm lucky that I do have some attorneys who have not yet billed me for the, I know, millions of dollars this has cost, but some of them have, for example, for the appeal. And some advocates, you know, nobody stepped forward. This was the craziest thing. No press groups or anything have shown any interest in this, surprisingly. But I spoke at a Fourth Amendment continuing legal education seminar to some lawyers, and they were shocked to hear nobody was helping with this. So these advocates have started a Fourth Amendment legal fund on GoFundMe if you wanted to look that up, Cheryl Atkinson Fourth Amendment Fund.
Okay. Now, names. Can you share some of the names that have now been disclosed regarding your case?
Well, the main one is Rod Rosenstein, who was then U.S. attorney in Baltimore, where this operation, not just spying on me, the reason it's important, they were spying on hundreds of U.S. citizens without warrants or even the FISA court, out of a task force under Rod Rosenstein in Baltimore, where they do a lot of cyber work and dark work, according to our sources. And, you know, we got names of several of the direct agents involved, such as, allegedly, Sean Henry. Sean Henry was at the time working under Rosenstein, we're told, but was head of the Washington field office for the FBI, went on right after this to go head up a company called CrowdStrike, which factors into a lot of other controversies, but he was with the FBI at the time. And there was another man, nobody would know his name, another Sean, but his last name is Bridges. He's in prison now. He's a Secret Service agent who was conducting the surveillance directly on me and others and got caught doing some other government corruption with his web work, and is now, we had to serve him in prison. So those are a couple of the names involved.
Now, Cheryl, one thing, in one of our other conversations, I'd asked you this question. You had mentioned just now that there had been classified information that had been put into your computer, but I had heard, and you confirmed, that one night you were at your computer, you did not have your hand on your cursor on your mouse, and your cursor was going all over your computer screen. Comment a little bit about that.
So long after we had our forensics on the main computers through the CBS forensics, my independent forensics, and the Intel community forensics, I was working on yet another computer, and I was working actually on some Benghazi interview questions, and data began just wiping hyperspeed. I mean, like, you know, there was this propaganda put out by Media Matters that said it looked like you were holding down your backspace key. If you held down the backspace key, there's nothing that would make it do what it was doing. And I was able to videotape a little bit of it with my phone because it just kept doing that until I disconnected it from the Wi-Fi. But it was just hyperspeed deleting words. And, you know, those were words I could type back. It's not like that was a critical deletion of information. But my forensics folks suggested it was probably someone at the time when we were investigating all this that just wanted me to see what they could do. And, in fact, we knew from the main computers that they had intruded upon that they can install spyware that lets them operate your computer remotely as if they're sitting at the computer. That's kind of the point. They can turn it on. They can operate it, they can work at it, they can do pretty much whatever they want as if they're there. And the only theory that came across to me was that they just wanted to kind of show me, you know, mess with me a little bit.
So were you scared?
I don't think scared. I would just say it was a little bit chilling, but more intrigued. You know, when you're someone that's trying to figure out the puzzle as to who's doing what, and you're gathering evidence. I mean, I was shocked that we had the forensic evidence so easily proving this right off the bat, because I thought that would never be possible, that we might theorize it but never be able to prove it. So to see that happen and to catch a bit of it on, you know, with my phone, that was just, you know, very interesting.
Okay, what about CBS? When you went to them, how did that conversation go with them?
Well, it was a little touchy because at the time I was trying to get out of my contract at CBS ahead of the contract. So that was just a backdrop. But they, the bureau chief immediately, you know, set out to hire independent forensics to confirm what the Intel community forensics had told me. And they were able to do that. And they announced it. CBS, after some months, said, put out a press release and reported that, you know, my computers had been intruded upon by unauthorized intruders. And kind of just left it at that. I mean, at the time, they promised they would keep digging and leave no stones unturned, but I never heard anything again from CBS. And I think the whole thing, it's hard to explain, but just put them in an uncomfortable position of some kind. And they, you know, said they were 1,000% behind, you know, protecting me and figuring out what had happened. But as I said, it sort of just floated off.
Now, Cheryl, I know that you are nonpartisan. You're a reporter. And so, you know, this particular question, you know, just let me know what you think. I mean, I find it so interesting that we have in this day and age right now. You know, we've had the whole, Russia spying and, all of that kind of political conversation out there. But here we had the U.S. government spying on U.S. citizens, and I've not seen the kind of outrage from maybe both political parties. That I just can't quite figure that out, Cheryl.
Well, this is what Edward Snowden was afraid of. I don't know if you remember when he first gave his revelations, the former NSA technician or advisor, whatever you would call him, he said he was afraid he would expose all these incredibly intrusive things and illegal things the government was doing and that ultimately nothing would happen. And I think that's the case. You know, I think people were very shocked to hear all of this as these revelations were first rolling out around 2013. And I believe quickly the guilty parties were able to distract the press quite easily by throwing shiny balls and getting us, well, where is Edward Snowden hiding? And what did Julian Assange do? And how long will he be holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy? Instead of us examining the materials that were coming out. And some of them are a little arcane and hard to understand, you know, some of the things that the government was doing and was lying about at the time, you know, to the public. But now we're kind of used to it. When you talk to people about the government spying on U.S. citizens and politicians, people kind of shrug and say, well, yeah, of course they do. And I think that's really was the biggest danger, and that's kind of come to pass.
Well, and that goes back to the Fourth Amendment, where in the Bill of Rights, people are supposed to be able to be secure in their property and the writings and things. And you know, I think because of convenience, in a way, we've given up a lot. And data, in a way, has become the new oil, if you will. But Cheryl Akison, let's go to break. When we come back, we have additional questions for you as you're connecting the dots, and we want to find out what's going to be happening here in the future with this case. So this is Kim Munson, Karen Levine, Remax Alliance, Lauren Levy, PolyFi Mortgage Specialist. They're both in studio with me. Cheryl Akison on the line. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with Remax Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly emails. On the line with me is Cheryl Akison, award-winning former CBS reporter. And she is now with, it is Full Measure on Sinclair TV. And Cheryl Akison, Karen Levine had a question that we were talking about during the break. So Karen Levine, RE/MAX Alliance, what's your question for Cheryl Akison?
Well, Cheryl, you had made the comment regarding the timing of all of this happening in your world. And at the time, you were contemplating wanting to leave CBS. And I was just curious what the motivating factors might have been behind you wanting to make that change.
Well, I think I was on the leading edge of this trend where news has completely changed and transformed into something that I think didn't used to be, mm-hmm. which is narratives and people pushing certain agendas and only wanting to hear certain facts. Now, again, that's an idea we've become accustomed to. But at the time, when it first started happening to me with my investigative reporting, where certain managers were shaping it, didn't want certain stories, wanted certain narratives, did not want certain people interviewed, it got to the point where, you know, I tried a lot of different stories when I could see they didn't want a certain kind. But there's a million stories out there. But it got to the point where almost nothing I wanted that was original reporting, which is what I do, would make air at CBS. And essentially being kept me and my stories off the air at a time when I was breaking or able to break some of the most important stories, I think, that I've ever covered. So this went on for quite some time, and I ultimately asked to leave my contract ahead, parting amicably. I just said, look, you can find a lot of people to report what's on the wire stories or what's been printed in the New York Times. That's not what I do. And, you know, just let me go, let me be, and find somebody else who will do the kind of reporting you want.
So, and Cheryl, this all makes me think a bit about, well, you know, getting to the truth. I mean, you truly are a journalist in the true sense of the word, is you are working to get to the facts, which, to my understanding, that's what you were doing with Benghazi, and also with the Benghazi story, and with Fast and Furious, which was that gun walking program under the Obama administration. You didn't have, quote unquote, an axe to bear from a political standpoint. You were just trying to get to the facts, from what I understand.
Well, yeah, not only not an axe, but a lot of times when I was assigned to cover these stories by CBS initially, I had no idea, with Benghazi, for example, that this was going to lead to what it did and implicate the administration. I had no idea when the Fast and Furious tip came to me. I thought it was a local Arizona ATF scandal. I had no idea that was going to go to the White House and that executive privilege would be declared over documents. So these were, you know, just normal nonpartisan investigations that ended up implicating powerful people in ways that clearly they, you know, they were upset about and wanted to monitor and wanted to see, I'm sure, which Obama officials were talking to me and giving me information, you know, what maybe what I was about to report ahead of time so that they could either stop it or at least be well-informed. And then according to the source that's come to us recently, they also were ordered to plant information on people's computers. They were ordered to try to get dirt on people. So I always suspected that as well, based on what intel sources were saying. But now we know, we believe that was the case.
Okay. So I... when, for some reason, this whole story about when your cursor was moving and, you know, these classified documents put under your computer, I mean, I just see such danger in that. But I remember asking you if this was under the James Comey FBI. And so what's your response to that?
This started under Mueller. There were several phases of the surveillance against me. But this started in March of 2011. I believe Mueller was FBI director at the time, and Holder was Attorney General, Eric Holder.
Wow. And then was Comey involved in this as well, or did this continue on with him, or how did that work out?
Well, some of the surveillance, I believe, continued under the Comey era. And we have surveillance, you know, forensic information that shows how long the surveillance continued. I don't have any information on, you know, his direct involvement, if any, because the sources that have spoken to us to date are from the Holder / Mueller time, I suppose you would say.
Okay. And what do you think for the future? What's going to happen as we move into the future here, Cheryl?
But one thing I wanted to point out, surely Comey knew about this case when he came in and did nothing about it that we know of. And the case was open at the FBI, showing me as a victim, although they never investigated or told me they had an open case about the computer intrusions. And seeing as a journalist, a national journalist was involved, I think they all would have known this was going on. And there was some hope on the part of some of my sources that when Comey got in, something would actually happen and this would be investigated and things would change. And of course that didn't happen. As for the future, you know, I've learned sadly and cynically that you can bring a suspect to the court in handcuffs and have all the forensics you want, but if the case never gets anywhere because of technical ways that the DOJ, Department of Justice, and the courts, if they want, can obstruct and make the case go away, it doesn't matter what you have, especially if Department of Justice, as of this point, they should be prosecuting people, but instead they're fighting in court. And when the law enforcement body responsible for the crime is also the one doing the enforcement, where does someone like me go? You know, I really don't know where this case is going to end up, but we're again trying to sue in court to see if we can get anywhere with that. In the end, if Department of Justice doesn't step up and take care of their own business, I don't think anything really changes.
Okay, now, but there's new leadership at the Department of Justice. So does that give you any hope?
Well, you know, Jeff Sessions, before he came into office, I'd never met him. He approached my husband at an event in Washington and told my husband when Sessions was a senator, he knew all about my case. He said I was a hero and this was a travesty and all kinds of things. And then he became attorney general, and I thought, wow, you know, at least they'll quit fighting me and maybe figure out who did this to all the people that were surveilled. And nothing happened. So I'd like to say the leadership matters, but it hasn't in the past.
What about William Barr?
So far,
what do you think?
Well, I haven't heard anything from him. The DOJ continued to fight the case under Barr, you know, earlier before it was dismissed. So I don't know if anything changes. I really don't.
Okay. And Cheryl, one other thing. You know, certainly this leadership, Mueller and Comey, and unfortunately Sessions not doing anything on this, you know, in a way I think is a stain on the Department of Justice and the FBI. But there's a lot of good folks that are very concerned about what happened to you in those entities, correct?
Yes. I mean, that's how I actually got the information. I would never have guessed any of this was going on. But there are, you know, good, well-meaning people who are shocked and stunned. One of the people who helped me has filed a sworn affidavit. He's a former FBI unit chief and a lawyer who was the initial source who got my computer to someone who confirmed the government computer intrusion. He said this was worse than anything he ever imagined, because when he was working on these sorts of matters with the FBI, he said they wouldn't have touched a journalist with a 10-foot pole. They were so careful and really just couldn't believe what they'd found forensically. So there are good people who are trying to help. Like I said, ironically, even if you, like, walk into the court with someone in handcuffs saying, I did it, you know, it doesn't necessarily even mean you get justice then.
Right, and they can lawyer up, and they can do that on the taxpayer's dime. So just we have just a few minutes left. So what would you want people to know about these two big cases that you were breaking, that this is why they spied on you? First of all, Fast and Furious, what would be the takeaway you'd want our listeners to know about that?
Well, that we never got to the bottom of what was really at the heart of that, because in the end, the government had allowed thousands of weapons to fall into the hands of Mexican drug cartels and claimed, oh, well, you know, when they finally admitted it, they first denied it, they finally admitted it and said, well, we were really trying to catch people, like give them guns so that we could catch the cartel leaders, which never made sense because they never tracked the guns and they never did catch big cartel leaders. So my sourcing says there was a larger operation going on. We never got to the bottom of it because the White House declared executive privilege over documents. I believe any relevant documents now are gone, you know, even if we were to see, we wouldn't be able to see them. So there's unanswered questions with that. And with Benghazi, you know, I think in the end what proved to be true was, sadly, that we left people, despite what you hear the narratives, it was proven that we left people there that we could have helped, could have sent help and rescue to, and it was very nearby, but chose not to, as there were several layers of help available to them, that the bureaucracy ignored, you know, warnings. We knew this was coming. We almost knew the time and date. It was so specific. And then covered up afterwards, claiming it wasn't a terrorist attack when everyone all the way up the ladder knew it was. So it's just a story of lack of accountability. But I would say one of the most important things I learned about the Benghazi story, we took out dictator Muammar Gaddafi, the United States did, you know, probably meaning well, thinking he was a bad guy, but he was actually helping us at that time, helping us with intelligence and evidence by that point. And what's left in its wake is a country now in Libya that doesn't really exist. It is chaotic. It is a breeding ground for terrorists. There is no dominant government that can control things. And this is the story of things, I guess, we have done before in the United States, moving in and taking out somebody without a plan or having things go awry afterwards. And that's where we are with Libya today.
Do you happen to know, I remember that they said that this whole thing, wasn't this because of some filmmaker that had made a film and then they, you know, they showed up at his house, this young person, and they threw him in jail. Do you ever know what happened to that person?
I do. This was part of the CBS drama. His name was Nakula Nakula. And he was a Middle Eastern Christian man who wrote an anti-Muslim documentary and made this film. And that was blamed improperly and incorrectly by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and others for the violence. When they knew terrorists had attacked, they ended up telling the public and the victim's families, oh, this awful filmmaker made a film that made some protesters mad and things got a little bit out of control. Well, that was false and they knew it. And that guy was put in prison. You know, Hillary Clinton told victims upon the return of the bodies, we will get the awful filmmaker responsible for this. And of course, he was never responsible for the events. And you can't arrest him. I would call Hillary Clinton's office and say, what were you going to charge him with? Because there is no charge you could charge him with. And they wouldn't answer. Well, they charged him with some sort of check charge or stolen check or financial crime, that's something he'd done. And he served, I think, a year in jail, went to a halfway house, and agreed to an interview. Now, whatever the truth is, he would have been a fascinating interview about all of this. And I was going to interview him as he was whisked from his halfway house to a safe house because he'd been getting, he and his family, a lot of death threats after all of this. And I went to CBS and said, okay, I need to run out to California. This guy's going to be released. No one's ever interviewed him. And the president of CBS at the time, David Rhodes, said, well, isn't that really old news?
Wow.
And I said, no, not really. But they didn't want the story, so we didn't get it.
Okay. Cheryl Atkison, thank you so much. We're out of time, but greatly appreciate it. Go to it's CherylAtkison.com, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Karen Levine, thank you for being here. Lauren Levy, thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Fascinating. So, quote for today is George Orwell. He said, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.